It is 7:45 on the first day of November. Don't forget to set your clocks back 1 hour overnight tonight as we begin our wine chat. Another one with Ted Farrell from Haskell's. Ted, good morning.
Good morning, Denny. How are you on this kind of eerie day?
Yeah, it's kind of nice, actually. I mean, I feel pretty good, and it's, you know, looking at the forecast as we have the ability to do here in CCO, this is doable weather. We can get things done.
Well, I guess I'm saying that just because it's still so dark. I'm not used to that. You know, seems a little wet and a little dreariness, but hopefully it'll dry out and be nice.
Absolutely, and it's going to be a nice day tomorrow. So what's on the calendar with our chat today?
Well, I was going to see, did you get a lot of trick-or-treaters last night?
Pretty quiet
really?
In the neighborhood. Yeah, how about you?
You had a lot of ghouls and goblins and robots and things like that going through. And Halloween is such a fun holiday, obviously, because people get to dress up and act, you know, in a different character or jump into things. I mean, we have our whole front yard decorated. I recycled all the kids' old costumes to make monsters and things like that. So it's a real fun holiday, and it's all about good spirit and good times. But people often forget what the importance of Halloween is, and that's actually what today is, and that's All Saints Day. And that's especially in the Catholic Church, it's a very holy day. It's a holy day of obligation where you remember all of those saints throughout the litany of the church and what they did to promote the church. And you have a little feast, you head off to Mass. So, you know, years and years ago, it was a very holy, holy, reverent day. And maybe the day of Halloween kind of takes away a little bit of the religious thunder. But the one reason why I bring that up is because the church and the alcohol industry is so intertwined. Our histories just go hand in hand with one another for centuries. And it's an interesting thing. You know, those monasteries that would crop up all throughout Europe and during, you know, the Dark Ages and things like that were really little cloisters of knowledge. Not only, you know, proper knowledge as far as learning the old texts and keeping the faith and, you know, learning Latin and perpetuating that in the Greek and then being some of the medicines. But with the kind of perpetuation of medicine inside of those monasteries, they always needed a little bit of alcohol in some of those remedies. And so not only did those monasteries, one of the first things they would always have is a little vineyard out back for the holy wines, but they also did a little distillation, you know, that some of those hard alcohols were a cure for us, still are. You know, look at you scraped your knee, you maybe rub a little rubbing alcohol on it, and it cleans it up and disinfects it. But, you know, as you know, you just smell rubbing alcohol, and even sometimes pure grain spirit, it isn't the most potable concoction to have. So what those monks did is they figured out all kinds of different herbs and roots and things like that to spice and flavor that hard alcohol with, so it becomes a little bit more pleasant to drink. And, you know, and even some of the roots and herbs and things like that were for medicinal purposes as well. So there's a terrific book out there that I highly recommend people to read, and it's called Drinking with the Saints by Michael Foley. And it's a very interesting book about not only the history of all these different saints, and it's kind of nice because he'll give a little background on each one, but he took a little bit of a liberty to sit and create a cocktail involving that saint. And, you know, some of them are straightforward. There's Benedictine, who, you know, they created a spirit in the monasteries years and years ago. Then in about the 1800s, this French fella took that recipe and went commercial with it. So that's a real simple one. But he also took a little bit of liberty because he created a drink for St. Peter, which was just basically a gimlet. But one reason why he picked that was the old story that St. Peter pulled his mother out of the hinges of hell just using basically an onion. And so a gimlet is basically a martini that they put onions in rather than olives. So that was that. He took a little liberty of that. Same with St. Paul. He had this called burnt rum or brandy milk punch, which, you know, there was a lot of writings by St. Paul talking about milk and all the different as metaphors. And then also there was a situation where he helped St. Timothy with he had some kind of ailment in his stomach, and they used burnt wine, which they kind of assumed was brandy. So some of it, there's some license that he took with it. Not overly 100% factual, but it's a fun read, because not to mention, do you learn a little bit of history about particular saints and why they became a saint, but then it's the little fun and frivolity of having some, a little cocktail associated with that. A few years ago, my younger brother and I, Bo, would work with a few of the churches in around town where we actually had a gathering, a couple times a year, where we picked a few saints to talk about. You made a cocktail, the priest would talk about those historical figures, why they're important, and then we would celebrate it. So you kind of forget that. But the interesting thing about that, like I said, is the history that the church has with the wine industry. You know, in California, running up the coastal spine of California is a path they call the Camino Real. And the Camino Real is simply a path that the Spanish monks took. And literally every, say, one day's mule ride, they would stop and set up shop. And they'd usually set up a monastery, a little church, and then obviously, more importantly, even in my industry, they would set up a vineyard, because you always need a little sacramental wine for that particular monastery. So all the way up the spine of California is the Camino Real, in San Diego, obviously Los Angeles, the town of Sacramento, Santa Rosa, up in wine country. But it's a very integral part, because when they would go out and do that, they would perpetuate their knowledge. They need a little bit of wine for the sacrament, obviously, but it's also a little bit on the medicinal side. So, there's all kinds of different saints out there that you hear about, like saint, like Benedictine. Well, that was a particular spirit they made in the monasteries years and years ago, and eventually a fella poured some brandy in it, created a whole new cocktail, Benedictine and brandy. So that was a prepackaged done. There was another one, Saint Germain. And now think of this. This is an elderflower liqueur. They have to harvest almost 1,000 elderflowers in order to make that 1,000 flowers per bottle to make that particular liqueur. So it's a real unique thing. There's a famous cordial out there as well called Chartreuse, made by these monks, and there's a little bit of a problem with it now, because the monks, it has become so popular, but the monks refuse to make more for production sake and commercial sake. They're too busy saving souls and making this, so they don't want to increase production. So Chartreuse, which used to be a little bit of a dust collector on your shelf because only a few people truly liked it, now has become a hot commodity and very difficult to get. But again, it's a levels of different herbs, all kinds of, I think there's about 32 different herbs and spices that they use that go into that Chartreuse to make it the flavoration as it is. And it, usually you just have a little sip of that. Some people might blend a little soda into it, but it's a rich, rich history that is people who like to imbibe really owe a big favor to those monks and those saints for all those years of kind of perpetuating and keeping the faith, no pun intended, about making alcohol, making wine, and doing that. And even in the town of Burgundy, you see a lot of different of the monasteries. The Cistercians were kind of some of the first capitalists as far as the Cistercian monasteries, that they were kind of riddled all throughout Europe. And one thing they did, and they knew how to make wine and make it well, especially in Burgundy, and then they would use that to kind of go out and apply their trade around and gain a lot of wealth, and they became a very powerful sect in France for quite a while. There was a massive monastery down south of Burgundy called Cluny, which was kind of the epitome of monastic life, and to the point it did get over commercialized and all the rich families would send their children down there and all that. But one thing that they did was kind of advance and perpetuate the wine knowledge and then also the alcohol or distillation knowledge that we see today. So we truly owe that a lot to that. So it's kind of a fun thing with that drinking with the saints, pick up that book, maybe rifle through a few pages and see what kind of beverage you might want to come out at, because it's a really fun thing to do. Just why not? Right, Denny? Just pick a topic, pick a saint, one of your favorite saints, and make a beverage about it.
I think that's a great idea. Whatever reason I need, I'll do it for sure. you know, I've kind of gotten away over the years from some of this. I used to love making, although nobody ate it but me, a Grand Marnier souffle. I tried that, and it worked. It was a little bit of work, but getting back to those particular kind of drinks, are they still popular? Like at restaurants, will people have, you know, a little Drambuie or something? Are you aware of sales in that regard?
Yes, what you're seeing is a little bit more. Let's say people are kind of getting into the more kind of culty or like made locally, sort of Amaros, you know, popular. Kind of wine, but it's also a cordial, is, you know, the different vermouths and Amaros. And you're seeing a lot of people make those, you know, some of the bartenders even make them in-house. And what you're also finding is some people are gravitating away, let's say, from a Drambuie, but they're finding something on a little bit more classically made one, a little bit more crafty made one. So people are still trying that. You're seeing all kinds of bartenders doing all kinds of derivations of these drinks, and oftentimes maybe they aren't using the brand name, let's say that Saint Germain elderflower. There's a local elderflower that someone is making, or, you know, even nationally, or a smaller one that they're using for that particular beverage. So they're still out there. There is a renaissance of bartending going on right now with mixologists and all this type of stuff, where people are really getting into it. And, you know, there's certain bars where you get there, you know, guy might take 20 minutes to make your drink, but it's worth the wait, because, you know, he tasted it, he shaked it, he chilled the glass, he did all this stuff. I suppose it's somewhat Pavlovian as well, because you said waited so long, you're going to taste good by that point.
I'm starting to salivate like the dogs. Yeah, that's great. That sounds like fun too. You know, I tell you what, I know we have to make way for the CBS News, but in the meantime, folks that want to try out some of these great ideas, I know you've got me interested in stuff here. How do we find Haskell's? There's a bunch of places.
Well, there's a bunch of places all throughout the metro area. We can't make the drinks for you, but we can get all the supplies ready for you and get things taken care of. And we have Haskell's locations all throughout the metro area to take care of any of those mixology needs that you might have. We have a Haskell's in downtown Minneapolis with free parking on the weekends. We have a Haskell's in Minnetonka right across from the Ridgedale Shopping Center. We have a Haskell's right in Highland Village right on Ford Parkway. There's a Haskell's down in Bloomington and Lowman's Plaza. If you're out on the lake today, you might just be wrapping up your boat today, but stop by Excelsior right in downtown Excelsior. You can even stop by the pub for a burger. There's a Haskell's out in White Bear Lake. Haskell's in Stillwater. If you're down south, swing by a Haskell's in Faribault. If you're headed on north, you could always stop by our Haskell's in Plymouth, or off of right up in Maple Grove, our large supercellar. It's a sight to be seen. And if you can't stop by any of those particular locations, you can always stop by Haskell's.com 24/7. Place your mixology needs or pick up some wines that you might have. We have several BOGOs going on. We're wrapping up our fall sale this weekend. Stop by and place your order. We'll take care of it.
Outstanding. And I'm going to find out what I can make with something that's connected to St. Ted. How's that?
Perfect, Eddie.
Keep posted. We'll talk next week. Thanks, Ted.
Look forward to it, Denny.
Ted Farrell from Haskell's.